Welcome to the Hoops and Howls podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. This is your Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. I'm Zach Harper. Mike Smeltz is producing, and we're joined by the esteemed, the critically acclaimed, the author of Golden. And you wrote a KD book as well, Marcus Thompson, right? What's the name of the KD book? I can never remember the name. I remember Golden, but I can never remember the name of the KD book. And you would trip me up. I was going to rack my brain, but literally right in front of me is Ethan's book, The Victory Machine, with that picture of Kevin Durant on there. I was like, I'm going to screw this up. I know it.
Oh, man. First off, KD is not the kid I don't love. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love both of my children equally.
Sure.
So, of course, I know the name of my second child. KD, Kevin Durant's Relentless Pursuit to Be the Greatest.
Relentless Pursuit. That's what it is. Yeah.
Now, I wasn't responsible for naming my second child. But, you know, hey, sometimes you got to take the name, you know, from the family or whatever.
Sure. Of course. How are those books doing in the wake of Ethan's just really irresponsible reporting in his book?
I mean, I'm just going to level with you 1,000%.
Yeah.
I'm one of them dudes, like, I write the book, I do the necessary appearances and promo, and then that's it. I don't pay attention at all.
Did it change from, like, the first book promo to the second book promo? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, no, it did, because, number one, the first book promo, I was lit, right?
Right.
I was hyped. Like, it was my first book. It just felt like a big moment in my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, just, it's a big moment. I remember doing a lot of thinking. I did a lot. You know, I was having these periodic award ceremony speeches in my head. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't even supposed to be here. You know. I'd look at the book and then I'd just dive into one of them, you know. They said you'd never make it, like, type of your third grade teacher said. You know, so it was like, I don't know, man. When you write a book and you finish it, it just, like, for me, that's the greatest accomplishment is finishing it.
Yeah.
And because both of them were so difficult to write, that I don't even really care to do the follow-up evaluation,
right?
Because I know, like, what it took for me to do it, and if that's not good enough for anybody, then I don't even really care, because it, you know what I'm saying? Because,
yeah, well, that's kind of the interesting thing about our job in general, right? Is, like, I'm wrong a lot, like, an unhealthy amount I'm wrong, but I always know that I've done my homework, like, I've actually put in the work. So if I just see something wrong or whatever, like, I can live with that because I know I've done the work. But when you get accused of, like, not doing the work, we're like, oh, you don't watch this, oh, you don't pay attention, you don't do this, right? That's when I don't care if someone's like, you're an idiot, you're wrong, like, yeah, okay, I agree, like, I am. But when someone's like, oh, you don't watch this, you don't do this, I'm like, no, this is literally my job. And so then, like, that annoys me. And I would imagine when it comes to writing a book, like, you know, you've done the necessary steps to make sure the book is as thorough and as good as you want it, right? And then after that, if it's received, it's received. But there's nothing you can do about that.
Well, the thing about books is, like, they are forever, but you don't get forever.
Right.
And because they're sports books, I don't know. I just feel like I went about it the wrong way. And I think Ethan kind of feels the same thing. Like, you can't be writing books as a second job. You know what I'm saying? It just changes everything. Yeah. It's not the same. It's not the same as focusing solely on the book. When I think about those books, I think about, like, my wife and my daughter and what they had to endure while I wrote them.
Right.
So for me, finishing it, accomplishing it, and moving on from it, like, I kind of have to, because they already sacrificed so much for me to do it, because it was like, it was crazy. I had 6 months to write these books, like, while I was working. Yeah. Like, that's nuts.
I mean, I remember the KD book, like, I think we must have been in San Francisco, right? Like, I think, because, yeah, we were in San Francisco, because I remember I saw you at the media hotel in San Francisco during one of, you know, whatever finals that was. Must have been 2017, or I can't remember what finals that was. And And I remember you were working on the book at the time, and you just looked spent. And you, yeah, and I, and you, I don't, you might have been like 30% done with the book at that time. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't that far into the book, or weren't.
It was like 5%.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just remember thinking, like, God, you seem miserable right now with this process.
Dude, it was the KD book was harder. It was just more difficult. It was, I mean, I just didn't have the, with Steph, I had all these years of,
right,
like built in knowledge, stuff that I just knew. And it was like illuminating that. With KD, it was just like starting from scratch. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I'm not a good start from scratch chef. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, go get me the cooked shrimp. Get me the sauce that's pre-made. Give me the pasta that's already done. Right. And just, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're not trying to make your own noodles, right?
You know what I'm saying? Like, right. If I'm doing that, I need to follow every single direction. It's painstaking. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it was rough. So, yeah, I don't, like, anything I get out of those books from here on out is all a plus. You know, occasionally I'll get a check and I'm like, yo, this is gravy, but them things are so far out of my mind.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, it's just, I don't know, my next book will just, I will never do that again. I will tell you that much. I will never do that again. I'll write a book again, not like that.
Well, it could have been
sabbatical.
It could have been a book on Jordan Hill, right? How about that for a second?
Yeah, Can you imagine? What would my life be?
It would have been a pamphlet.
See, these do-overs, man, are talking about these teams and these fan bases, but they're not considering the writer. Like, why do y'all want to wreck my life? You know what I'm saying? Like, why would I be subject to Larry Riley and Jordan Hill for the next? Like, think about this. If they get Jordan Hill, Jordan Hill doesn't pan out, right? Like, they're still the Warriors.
Yeah, they're always the Warriors, right? Like, you're still like banking on Monte Ellis to do something. I mean, maybe Bob Myers comes in still and helps change some things, but I, you know, maybe the ownership, you know, buys
Steve Kerr don't take the job.
No, Steve Kerr definitely doesn't take the job, but yeah, they're the Wolves still,
yeah,
right?
No question. No question. And you know what? Look, you guys were the Wolves, and look, you still turned out to be great. Me, I need the aid. I need the right. Handicap.
Right.
You feel me? So I needed a team to become a dynasty.
Well, I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, wow, the Wolves like really have had some incredible writers covering this team and have almost nothing to cover year after year. And I was thinking about the Warriors, you know, media and everything and how things have changed in that way. And I don't even know, like, I don't cover a team anymore, right? But, like, I wouldn't even know what to do if I was writing about victories every day.
Now, watch when the Wolves have their turn on the throne.
When?
All the writers will be
trash. It's been 30 years. Right? We'll all be dead.
It's going to be trash $15,000 bloggers, right? It's going to be all, you're going to be like, this is, you're going to be like, 64 years old,
right,
and finally wait for this moment. You'd be like, this is the coverage I get?
This is it?
This what? Was the, you this had was to the fire thing? Up an old blog.
I know. It's gonna be garbage. You, John Krasinski, and I did this do-over for our do-over series on The Athletic about the Wolves passing on Steph Curry twice in the same draft and taking two players at his position. And I always find the Warriors side of it fascinating because we picked apart the Wolves for years, and justifiably so, because David Kahn royally screwed up this franchise. Well, I wouldn't even say screwed up.
Is David Kahn still around? Like, is he in Minneapolis?
I think he's like coach or coach. I think he like teaches something at NYU at this point.
So he ain't walking the streets.
No, like he ain't I don't think he's been back to Minneapolis since he got fired.
Could he walk the streets?
No. I mean, I guess I don't know how many people would recognize his face just outright, but he would not be well received anywhere. There is no like, even for any, like, even for Minneapolis, there's no Wolves hipster that's like, you know, David Kahn actually did a pretty good job. Like, that person doesn't exist.
That isn't there.
No.
I feel like you're just gonna leave that void open like that. I think you should go ahead and
You want me to do it? I've said too many rude things about David Kahn over the years that I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could. I don't think I would pass on. I don't think they could pass me off as that guy.
Nah, you good. Who's gonna hold you accountable? You straight.
That's true. Well, yeah, and I could just say I could always just lie and say, "Oh, it's a bit." That's always the genius thing to do. Is excellent say, hey, it's a cover. Bit. How do you not
excellent
get it?
Excellent cover.
Yeah. How do you not get it?
Excellent cover. It's the reason I'm about to become a rapper. I could just say it was bars.
Well, you've got the hottest track of the suspended season.
Oh, do I?
Don't
is
you?
There like a Grammy for it?
I don't know if there's a Grammy for it. I mean, you can start doing another fake speech if you want. Bro, but
don't mess around, man.
You blew Chris Haynes out of the water, right? Chris was great. Chris was great. We're not counting what Broussard did because that was terrible. But you had the hottest one.
I appreciate that coming from my the best writer on XXL, the editor in chief of Stores 2020. You feel me?
You know?
Do I get five mics?
I think so. I think you get five mics. I might even mess around with a six mic in there.
Break the grading scale is that? Like, jeez. You know, it's Outkast.
There's Outkast, Illmatic, and Marcus Thompson during this suspended season.
Quarantine Flow. Let's go.
Yeah, Quarantine Flow. You know exactly.
Wow.
So how close were the Warriors to ending up with Jordan Hill? Or they were going to take Steph.
Never getting Steph. Like I'm telling you, it wasn't until actually Sacramento passed where it became for real.
Okay.
But everybody sitting there watching, like, there's no way. There's no way he gets past. They got two picks. There's no way he gets past Minnesota. But and what I learned afterwards, their board was Blake Griffin 1, Steph Curry 2.
Okay.
But they just didn't think Steph would make it all the way down there.
Now,
they just didn't.
Now, is that something where, because I do find this with draft analysis that bothers me. You know, like, oh, this guy was at the top of our board, and you picked like 14th. You're like, really? That's what happened. So Steph was legitimately number two on their board.
I do feel like Don Nelson was revising history, right? Like he was saying, oh, I knew about him all along. Covering Don Nelson that season, there was absolutely no way he was watching Davis in basketball. it was the most, oh, yeah, I had. And then afterwards, they're like, you know, but they had nixed this trade agreement or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, they were putting on the airs of, nah, this we always, that deal was contingent on him not being there. We always going to take him. And then, but one, you know, Larry Riley was saying it and it was like, yeah, whatever. When Nelly said it, it was like, okay, yeah, they really love this dude. The only reason I believe that Steph was number two on the board, because for 2 years, Larry Riley had been hyping this dude to me. Like he'd been saying it. Like we talk draft and we talk prospects, and Larry Riley was one of those GMs who probably in normal circumstances wouldn't be a GM, but the Warriors were such a mess that he ended up like rising from Don Nelson's assistant to general manager. So like he was just like, look, man, I'll tell you what's going on, just don't burn me, right? So right. He would talk like you always knew what was up, and he's a very one of those straight shooter type guys, so he's not a good liar anyway. So he would just be like, look, you can't write this, but here you go, right? But we were just talking. He would, oh, man, I miss those days where the general manager would just tell you the players they like. You know, you could just talk. But you're like, hey.
From watching The Last Dance and just the access to Michael Jordan, who was the biggest star in the world, looking at the access there and then hearing, you know, you talk about this, I'm just like, it just doesn't exist in that way anymore.
It doesn't. I mean, but how crazy? Why is it crazy? Like, why can't you go into a draft telling the people who cover you every day, yeah, we like these four players. Like, right. What do you lose?
Right. Right. What do you lose? Well, and that's the thing.
What do you lose?
Because Jalen Green's going to be the number one pick in 2021, right? And whoever ends up with that selection, you know, if let's say it's the Warriors. Let's say the Warriors luck out and they get the number one pick in 2021 for whatever lottery gods, right? And then
from
Minnesota. And then Bob Myers is gonna come out there and be like, you know, well, yeah, we like Jalen, but we're doing our due diligence. Like, no, you're taking Jalen Green. What are you talking about? Just say it. Just say, a lot of this just stuff say you're taking like, Tim Duncan or LeBron James or whatever, right? Like, just say it.
Yeah. A lot of this stuff is based, it's like about how you view basketball and how you see the game, right? A lot of this stuff is what you value in players. Like, this is how you kind of shape a franchise. We know, we kind of know a San Antonio guy. You know, we know right. a guy at the Spurs, like, we know the model, right?
Right.
And it's like, if you were able to know that because you were having these conversations. And I know that you don't want to like burn whatever pick, but the idea is if you're talking about it, we're learning about it. And now we can like, it gives us the perspective. And then you close that spigot off and then get mad when we don't understand how you think as a franchise. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, you got to know the game. Like,
yeah,
I know the game, right? And I know how I see the game, but you never talk about how you see the game.
Right.
So you know what I'm saying? Like, so what are we doing here? So, but back then you could like talk to the GM and we talked about players. Like even before Riley, it was Chris Mullin. He talked about players and, you know, you wouldn't like go right that, oh, he said this player was trash, but they'd say it, you know, and you kind of knew. So now when we're doing these mock drafts around the league, it's like, yeah, the Warriors are going to take so-and-so. You're like, nah, I don't think they're going to take this person, because now you can speak authoritatively. But it's just so different now. But that's what Riley used to do. He'd just talk about prospects. Or I'd be like, hey, what do you think of this guy? Because, by the way, covering the Warriors, you start looking at the draft in January back then.
I mean, they're like, wolves. Like, I mean, the only time you didn't look at the draft, even when they were good, was when they lost draft picks over Joe Smith. Right? Like, even right, when they were good, you're like, man, who are they going to grab? Like, they got to get someone in here to help out.
That's so funny. Right, exactly. So we were in full, like, hey, who you thinking? And I remember in 2008, Steph did his, like, tournament run.
Yeah.
But before that, for some reason, we were talking about, like, players in college, and he was like, I'm telling you, you got to – the Steph Curry kid is going to be something. And so I remember looking it up and thinking, like, man – this, you know, because remember, he's like a GM who's probably not supposed to be a GM, right? He's like, he's in the seat, but, and then everybody thinks Don Nelson is really running the show because he's Don Nelson's homie. So it's like, you know, whatever, this dude ain't the GM. And then he says, you got this, I'm telling you, this kid from Davis is going to be something. So I look him up and you see this kid in this like XL jersey playing for Davidson. You're like, man, this dude really don't know what he's talking about. You know what I'm saying? Like, he went and found this dude at you think this dude is about to be a beast in the NBA, right? And so then this is before Steph goes off in the tournament. And then Steph goes off in the tournament and he's like, see? And I'm like, I mean, yeah, okay, it's the tournament though.
Right, yeah. Well, it's just like, college. You know what's he gonna do?
Yeah,
right.
this is a different beast. And then Steph didn't play well. I think it was Kansas. He did not play well. And it was like, yeah, see, this is what happens when the competition steps up, blah, blah, blah. So he had been hyping. And then it was like, I remember a time he went to see Steph play at Purdue or Indiana or something like that. Might have been Purdue. It's all in Golden, The Miraculous Rise of Steph Curry. But and Steph was terrible. He had like 11 turnovers. Well, wait,
real quick. Where can you find that? Can you find that book anywhere they sell books?
Wherever books are
sold. Oh, okay. All right. Just making sure.
KD, the relentless Kevin Durant's relentless pursuit to be the greatest is also wherever books are sold. It's been a while. I'm rusty with the pitch. So Steph had like 11 turnovers. He shot terribly from the field, and Davidson lost. And he comes back and is like, "Yeah, this dude's legit. Like, this is legit. Like, I was like, dude, he just got destroyed." He was like, "But no, they beat him up. They destroyed him. He turned up all over." He would not stop coming. He just kept going. I was like, oh, yeah. So now I'm looking for the next GM search because this dude ain't going to make it. Right. and you know, Steph's a big deal by then. He goes back to school because instead of coming out because he wants to play point guard.
Yeah, he's got to show he's a point guard, right?
He had a point guard already, so he was a two. So now he stays the third year, and he has this big showdown with Patty Mills at St. Mary's College, which is out here. So I go to that game because he'd been hyping Steph. Patty Mills was kind of a deal, and it's like, all right. And he wasn't that great in that game. Like, it wasn't like, oh, here's this NBA talent who's about to dominate. Like, you know what I'm saying? It just wasn't that. So it was just like, I mean – you could see he had skills, but he just looked so small.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We just hadn't seen a dude that small be so dominant. But it was 2 years of Larry Riley hyping Steph. Right. So that's the reason I believe it, because he was just constantly talking about this dude like he was a star, and nobody else was talking about this. Like nobody, well, Don Nelson was not talking about Steph Curry. Like nobody else around was talking about, like, from a scout GM perspective. Remember, you used to talk to scouts too.
Oh man, what a remember time that was. Be, oh, yeah,
scouts used to be a big part of NBA coverage. It feels like that's diminished significantly. Ethan's like the only dude who talked to scouts.
They're like three I can talk to, and that's it.
I think I'm down to two. Yeah. I think I'm down to two scouts. I mean, there is a lot of juggling, and plus scouts ain't.
And one of them does not think I'm funny. One of them really does not think I'm funny, but will still talk to me for some reason.
But it's like an old guard now. Yeah. Now the scouts don't have as much clout as they used to. It's the analytics dude in the front office. You know what I'm saying? It's like, but the scout is just like the old baseball guy who's trying to tell you he's got a good chin, so you should draft him.
Right.
But it's just like talking about Steph back then, especially in that like year and a half, year before he got drafted, nobody was talking about him like Larry Riley was. So I can understand how when Steph is there on the board, they're like, they probably even forgot about the deal with Phoenix. You know what I'm saying? They were just like, because they made, that's how they didn't think it was going to happen. They made a deal with Phoenix. They made a trade with Phoenix for the 7 pick and Amari Stoudemire. They were finally getting the big man. He was coming off knee surgery, didn't know what he was getting, but they finally got their big man. So that's what they had done. They just didn't want Jordan Hill. Like, that was going to be their fate, and they were just trying to get out of the Jordan Hill fate.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, man, the Wolves didn't really have Steph up there. Especially, like, Johnny Flynn came in and you know, wowed them, and they love his leadership. And because Johnny's, like, personable. He's charismatic, right? Like, you can like, if Johnny can play,
take your eyes off him on the
floor. Exactly. Like, yeah. And dude, that's even smaller than Steph, right? Like, I mean, it's crazy. But the idea that they weren't going to, because he wouldn't work out, and this is always the biggest farce to me, is when someone, I'm not working out for that team, I'm like, I don't give a damn. I don't need the workout to determine. The workout helps, right? But if I'm a GM, like, a guy won't work out for me, that's not saying, that doesn't take me out of the game for that guy. Like, that's right. that idea is so stupid to me, that you would then be like, well, this guy won't work out for us. What are we supposed to do? I don't know. All the other intel that NBA teams do on players. What about
it's
that?
Like, if it's like if I somehow or another won a date with Rihanna and she didn't want to be there, like, I'm still going to be at this date.
Right,
know?
Exactly. Like, you're still getting the appetizer, the main course, and the dessert, like, whether she can be tuned in or not. But
I mean,
matter.
Like, this is on you, but this is what's happening. Like, this is about to be a night for me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's how the Warriors were. Like, they were begging him.
Yeah.
They were begging the Warriors not to take him. The agent was literally begging for him not take him. They wanted to go to the Knicks so badly, and they got all the way to 7. The Knicks were at 8, and they got all the way to 7. So they were especially disappointed that the Warriors jumped in. But I mean, Larry Riley told him, "There's nothing you can say to me that's going to stop me from drafting this guy."
Which is how it should be. Like, that's how it should be. That's crazy to me. I mean, another funny story from that whole draft process was the reason the Kings passed on Ricky Rubio was the infamous steak story. Like, his mom, his mom cut up his steak, and they're like, all right, well, we can't take this kid.
They all act like it's like gambling, right? Like, there are these omens all over the place that tell you if you're about to win, what number you should play, what color, like, you know. And no, it's actually not that.
It's not that at all.
It's actually a little bit more scientific.
Yeah.
You can actually do your homework, right? There are reasons teams hit all the time. It's not 100%, but you can do 70% well in the draft.
Yeah.
Like you can. It's not like, hey, I don't know, man. He wore a red tie into the meeting. You know what I think about Red.
Right, yeah. That's, I mean, it's just so stupid, the things that they go through. And, like, and granted, like, Tyreek Evans was phenomenal the rookie year, right? Like, he was unbelievable. That was my first season, like, covering a team for the True Hoop Network. And so, like, I was, like, enamored. I was like, oh my God. Because I didn't know. Yo,
came out of the gates, too. Like,
yeah, I didn't know the ups and downs of, like, you can be too close to the team, because I don't even give a shit about the Kings, right? Like, I've never been a Kings fan. I rooted against them when they were playing the Lakers in Sacramento, like, all that stuff, right? I was that guy. And so, like, I didn't care about the Kings. And so, but I became enamored with Tyreek Evans' rookie year because he was the lone bright spot on this horrible team I had to cover every day. And so, like, you can get lost in that when you don't know what you're doing. And so Tyreek was, like, a perfectly acceptable pick, like the plantar fasciitis stuff and the problems kind of derailed him. And he was probably going to be phased out by positionless basketball anyway, because the funny thing about his workouts is they were just bringing him in against all these point guards. And he was a monster compared to all these point guards. And so he was destroying in workouts. Yeah. And they're like, oh, we got to take this guy, not thinking, well, what if they put a small forward on him? Then what does he do? Right? Yeah, and absolutely. Like, as a rookie, he was fine. But once they put they were like, oh, by the way, this guy cannot see to his left. He doesn't go left at all. Just sit on his right hand and he's neutral.
Nah, he'll like, Hezzy and look that way a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. A little
you
bit.
You know what I'm saying?
A like, little bit.
Get that little, oh, go, that head fake, that work every time on the playground, just get you bigger and faster than everybody. But that draft really made me, you know, Tyreek was the first player where I started to understand how some dudes just peak physically earlier than other people. And now that's something I look at. I know people were saying it like with Zion, but he's such a freak. But sometimes a dude is just a grown man in college playing against boys. And that Tyreek felt like once he started playing around grown men, like he lost the advantage he had, which, and Steph was kind of the antithesis of that, right? Like, it's like, yo, if you could ball while you still like adolescent, like, how much better is it going to be when you get to be of size?
Yeah, when you get to be of size, when you actually put some real muscle on and everything, right? Yeah, you become strong. Yeah.
So that was interesting. Tyreek was such a beast. I remember you were probably at this game. It was a big deal. I think I've told this story before, but Tyreek, the Warriors were playing at Sacramento. Tyreek was just, you know, bro, he just couldn't. They had no rim protection, and you just couldn't stop him from getting to the hole. Like, yeah. Especially that it was like the first half of the season where he was unstoppable.
Yeah.
And so he's cooking the Warriors. This is like when the Warriors were like basically trying to beat the Kings, right? It was like a struggle. So they're down at halftime. I think Tyreek has like 19. And I tweet out, the Warriors have no answer for Tyreek Evans. And so, you know, halftime's over, second half happens. In the fourth quarter, Steph guards Tyreek. Tyreek is taking all these bad shots.
Yeah.
And he's like 0-for-7 in the fourth quarter. The Warriors come back and win. And I go into the locker room. This was at Arco Arena. I go into the locker room, and Steph is looking at me like, yeah, what? Clamps. What you got to say now? Clamps. And I'm like, what? And he's like, clamps. I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? I saw your tweet. Warriors don't have an answer for him, huh? What did he shoot in the fourth quarter? Clamps. And I was like, you're reading my tweets at halftime? it was the happy Gilmore response, right? Yeah. Like, you're reading my tweets at halftime? I felt a little proud of that. Like,
yeah. Maybe you sparked the dynasty.
Where's your ring? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I did get one of them little cheap ones that I gave to my mom. You know, they pass them out on ring.
Oh, no, that doesn't count. That doesn't count.
I mean, my bad.
If you're bored in the house, why not spend some time on yourself? Our sponsor today, Manscaped, is here to make sure you're well-groomed above and below the belt. Manscaped promotes clean hygiene when it comes to shaving thanks to their Lawnmower 3.0. I know what you're thinking, guys. Ooh, I don't want to do that. Oh, that's crazy. Oh, I don't, I'm a man. I don't do that kind of stuff. Trust me. You in quarantine right now with a significant other? Do that. Go hit that Lawnmower 3.0 with Manscaped. Do it and see what the reaction is. Grooming system has never been better. It's never been easier. It's never been cleaner. It promotes great hygiene. The tools are precision engineered for your family jewels. It doesn't get better than Manscaped. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 waterproof cordless body trimmer and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. They've got deodorant down there. They got moisturizer. Anything you could want, they've got, and it is skin-safe technology, advanced skin-safe technology that makes it completely nick-free. It couldn't be better for you. You're going to love it. Your significant other's going to love it. And by the way, get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code THEATHLETIC. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. The Shed Travel Bag, which is a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. I'm wearing them right now. They are so comfortable, and let me tell you, not a chafe to be had. So go to manscaped.com today and use code THEATHLETIC.
You think Steph always becomes this, right? Because I've written about it before. I'm like, I think the Timberwolves screw up Steph Curry. Or maybe he ends up, I think he would have gone somewhere else, and then maybe he gets it. But I don't think he ever becomes this guy on the Wolves.
I'm so torn. I could go with that. I could definitely see that. I could see him being good enough that some other team might be like, hey, the Wolves are really sitting on the gym here. They don't know what to do with it. Let's go get that. Because some other teams try to do it with the Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, we already know about the whole Chris Paul. You know, there was a few times where people were calling about, and at minimum, people were calling about the Warriors. I know it got to a point where Steph was off the table, but they were at least listening, if not offering them, right, as Ethan said. So I do see a universe where he goes to the Wolves, they somehow trick that off, and another team goes and grabs him, and he becomes Steph. So I'm so torn about this as we were talking about it. Part of me looks at the situation and realize how many things had to go right for this to happen. Like, a lot of stuff went wrong, but a lot of stuff went right.
Yeah.
But also, like, to see what he went through to get here makes him seem like the type of dude where you're not going to stop this guy. Like, he's delusional with his confidence. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he is actually skilled, right? And he does work harder than anybody. And usually things work out for people like that, right? Like, so Maybe I don't know. Does it not work out like this? Or was this all like some Final Destination plot where no matter what, he would have ended up back on the Warriors winning their championships, right? Like, he just feels like one of those dudes where it was going to work because of who he was and how he operated and what his skill was. And I think that's a big deal. Like, no matter what, he could shoot like this.
Yeah, he was always the shooter.
Yeah,
right?
No matter what, he could shoot like this. And maybe that was always destined to change the NBA. And there was nothing anybody could do about it. And the Warriors just happened to be the ones who capitalized on it, right? It's just a lot. If you lay it out, nah, man, he doesn't get Steve Kerr coming in with this motion offense. He doesn't get Klay Thompson next to him in the 2011 draft. If you know, he doesn't get a dude who is one of the greatest defenders of all time and doesn't care about scoring on his team.
Right.
Right. Like, he just, like, a lot of this stuff, he doesn't end up in this hotbed of basketball that no matter how bad you are, like, somewhere, just something about NBA hoop here where he becomes this cult figure. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of this stuff had to happen just to exalt Steph into this global figure. So it feels like, this is how it worked out for him. But at the same time, like, here's a dude who was, you know, 5 foot nothing. 100 and nothing, right? and with fragile ankles, and he still made it. Like, right. So how do you stop that? How do you stop that? Talk about I can do all things. Like, Steph was in the league young, and people are killing. Like, people were saying he should be a sixth man. He wasn't gonna make it. Yeah. Like, he wasn't that good, and he was thinking, I'm going to be an all-star. there was a sense of like, man, this dude is delusional.
Right. Well, and then I'm sure like once he like becomes all-star level player, I think David Lee made it over him, right? Like they had a good team. David Lee. And then he burns down.
Does it happen? Does David Lee shift him to another gear?
Right.
When he's like, oh, y'all still doubt me? All
right. Right. Yeah, exactly. And then he burns down the Nuggets. And I'm sure at that point he started thinking like, oh, I could be the MVP. Like, I'm actually good. Like, I'm good enough to be an all-star. Like, I could be even better than that. Right? Like,
Why did he even think he could be in the NBA?
Exactly. I mean,
I want to be in the NBA.
Right. Well, that's a funny thing. So, arguing with certain writers during that first run, right, where they burn down the Nuggets, and I'm getting like, oh, these are lucky shots that Steph's hitting, and I'm like, all right, I tried to put it in context. I'm like, all right, like, I'm a pretty good shooter, right? Like, I feel like if you can't block my shot, I'm not really worried about you contesting it. Like, once I realize, like, oh, that person's not blocking this shot, like, I'm letting it fly, and I feel pretty good about it. That's me, Marcus. Now imagine you have the shooting ability of Steph Curry. Like, I don't know, like, that has to bring, I mean, look, I'm not a very religious person, but if I could shoot like Steph Curry, yeah, I'd probably believe in God, too.
Absolutely, right?
You know, like, I would believe in, like, oh, my God, I am destined for something. Like, because imagine the amount of misses that he actually has in life, and not that many.
It's just like, I remember talking to Steph one time and was just trying to get him to explain why he shoots so well. And, you know, he had his technical stuff, but there's a part of shooting that's like really mysterious and you just got to do it. It's like, for instance, and you know this, right? If you had a free throw line and you shoot the first one long.
Yeah.
How do you shoot it shorter the next time? Like, how do people say, oh, he took something off it? Like, literally, how do you do that? You can't explain it. It's a feel thing.
Right.
So he's describing his stuff and he's like, well, no, you just, and I'm like, but how do you do that?
Well, that's the funny thing too, is like, is the free throw thing. People are like, oh, so you just shot it shorter the next time. I was like, no, I shot it normal the next time. Right. Like, you have to try to explain that, like, no, I didn't take something off. I had put too much on. Me taking something, like, it's actually, no, I went back to the way the shooting motion's supposed to be. You don't alter your shot based on that one. You just try to get back to your muscle memory. Like, it's little things like that, that there's that connection isn't always there for a lot of people, right?
And that's what I'm saying. Like, and you can't explain that via elbow in or, like, there's no actual.
No, like, that stuff matters. That stuff matters because it's a buildup, but that stuff doesn't actually matter in those little moments. Like, oh, that one went long. Okay.
It's like, he's like, man, the key is to shoot the shot the exact same way every time.
Yeah.
Man, how do you do that? Right. You know how many times I've shot it and it's like rolled off my pinky, or, you know, it's like, you could feel, this is the Draymond's problem. People are like, oh, Draymond can't shoot. Draymond does not shoot the same shot every time. Right. Like, it just depends what kind of shot he's going to shoot. Like, it just varies, right? But Steph, Clay, they do it the same thing, same way every time. Like, the way he sees basketball and the way it feels in his hand is just different. Like, it's savant like. Yeah. It's just different. So I don't know how to say that dude wouldn't made it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
right. Yeah.
I don't know how I can fix myself to say
that. Yeah. Maybe he is touched by a higher being, and that, and then therefore the Wolves would have been touched by a higher being.
He certainly believes so.
How could you not? Look at his life, Marcus.
And does it even matter if whether it's true or not, if he believes it, that's what matters.
Yeah.
That's what carries him. Like, he believes it. He believed it when he was wearing number 20 because it was the last jersey and he was a freshman and they put him on varsity at the end.
Right.
And they didn't have a jersey except one left and it was large. So the Joker was like he was wearing a curtain. And he believed it when they put him on the court. Like, he believed he should have been there the whole time. Like, this ain't new. He been nuts.
Right. Well, it's the whole, like, everyone clowns, like, when Mario Chalmers is like, I'm a top 10 guard in the NBA. Right? And everyone, like, God, what an idiot. And and to me, I'm like, look, I'm happy to crack the jokes, but I'm guessing you don't make it out of Anchorage, Alaska to make the NBA unless you're delusional.
Thinking you hope you bottom 10.
Right, exactly. No, like, that's not how that works. You're delusional. There's probably a long time where Mario Chalmers thought, I'm the greatest player in the world. Right?
You gotta be delusional. Yeah. This dude, Steph, man, the whole range shooting thing, they won a championship and they went to New Orleans. and they were playing the Pelicans, and Anthony Davis was blitzing the screen.
Yeah.
And, you know, Anthony Davis is like stretches forever. So when he's coming off that screen, he didn't have any daylight. Like, and they know Anthony Davis will block your shot when you think you can get it off.
Yeah.
So he's coming off the screen, and Anthony Davis is there at the three-point line, and he can't, like, he doesn't feel like he could clear it. So he's 30 feet from the basket, and he's just like, well, if he's going to be right there, I'll just pull from right here. And, like, this is happening in his head while he's on the court. And he takes a 30-footer, and he was like, yeah, see, that does work. And he does it again, and now people are shooting from 30 feet. Right. Like, who does that mid game? like, this dude is nuts, yo. He's just like, oh, you going to be right there? All right, I'm going to shoot. Everybody in the history of basketball before him has said, right, if you're coming out here like that, I'm going to go around you.
Meanwhile, everyone listening to this podcast is having flashbacks to, oh, the Wolves have to put Luke Ridenour at the two tonight against Joe Johnson because they're too injured.
That's so
that's
funny.
The other, yeah. That's the other angle of that. That's the idea. That's, yeah, yeah.
I don't get the Johnny Flynn thing. I just don't.
Well, the funny, like, the
I get Rubio. I don't get Johnny Flynn.
Well, like, the Rubio pick, and Rubio was good, right? Like, Rubio blew out his knee as a rookie, yeah, and yeah, he never learned to shoot all that great.
But if
he
you
was
watch
like,
Rubio,
like
in
he
the
could
Olympics,
hoop, like
you
he
could see,
yeah,
yeah,
absolutely, he could, like, he could play. The hype was real. Yeah, the hype was too much. He wasn't the next Chris Paul or anything like that. But he's still like that's a hit on that pick. Right, like he gave them six really, really solid years, and he's a good pro, and he's a starting point guard. Like, you just can't miss on those picks.
They like, you get all of the picks before. You get Blake. I even get Hashim Thabeet. Like, every GMs have been seduced by height since basketball has been invented.
Right,
right.
Yeah. Like I personally thought he was trash, but there are plenty of guys I thought.
No, he was clearly trash.
Yeah, but like there are plenty of guys that I thought, oh, this dude's gonna be great, and he was trash.
You know
exactly
what I'm saying? Like, I'm telling you, right? Like, a 7-footer ain't nothing but a man with potential.
Right, exactly.
Like you can fix him.
Right. The James Harden pick, you get it, right? Especially in retrospect.
Yeah, you get James
like,
Harden.
Yeah,
no
he was
you get Harden.
Yeah. You get Tyreek. Tyreek, a man among boys. Like, he had a great rookie year, a historic rookie year. It looked like they cashed in on that pick. And then the Rubio pick happens. But the Johnny Flynn pick, and like, and what John, you know, outlined in our little roundtable discussion of like, well, the idea was he could play point guard for 2 years until Rubio came over. It's like, what? You're drafting a guy for 2 years? How does that make sense?
The part that I don't get, just say, all right, Rubio, we got him, but we ain't going to keep him. We're going to stash him, and in 2 years, we're going to get him back. So we need a point guard in the meantime, right? Okay, hey, don't spend the number six pick on that, right? I got it. Didn't they have the 27 picks?
They had 5, 6, 18, and I think 26. I think or 28. I think Wayne Ellington was 28.
Yeah. So, they got Wayne Ellington, right?
Yeah. They got Wayne Ellington at the end of the first.
It's just like your second pick wasn't even the best point guard available, right, or that you even selected, like. I mean, they could have done so much there. They could have done so much there at that pick. But and Johnny Flynn's – don't get Steph. I'm saying don't get Steph.
Right.
Steph's out. I got it. DeMar DeRozan's there. Austin Day.
Yeah.
Who didn't turn out to be that great, but he would have made more sense.
Yeah. Well, even if you didn't grab a point guard, you have Brandon Jennings and Ty Lawson.
You have Brandon
Drew Jennings. Holiday.
This is point guard central
Jeff
right here.
Jeff Teague, who obviously they end up, Darren Collison, like, it's all these point guards, and this is the thing, like.
Shoot, Tony Douglas was in that draft.
Right? Like, Tony Douglas was kind of like, oh man, the Kings loved him after that workout. He was the only dude that, like, competed against Tyreek Evans. They would love Tony Douglas. Oh my God. I was shocked they took Omri Caspi over Tony Douglas. I was convinced Tony Douglas was also going to the Kings. But it was, like, yeah, that's the thing, and granted, Johnny's story looks worse because he hurt his hip and he couldn't come back from it, right? But but he wasn't gonna be that dude anyway. Like he could have been serviceable. He could have been a decade of point guard, right? But he wasn't gonna be a good point. Like a
even
good
if
point
he's
guard.
Good, it's bad value. It's just bad value pick. This is not how you draft, and that's the worst part about it. Like, Khan didn't understand draft value clearly because he just treated the number six pick like a filler.
Well, and you know what I'm saying? And like, he claimed he you're right. He treated like a filler, and he claimed, "Oh, well, this was me throwing a bone to the scouting department because they loved
that's even worse. Like that's even worse. Like
I loved your line. I loved your line of the piece. Like, isn't the bone their check? Like, yes. Like the bone is like you get paid for this.
Yeah, you get paid. Like you're using a number six pick to appease people. Like you clearly don't understand the value of a lottery pick.
Right.
Like this. That's not what you do with a lottery pick. And they have four picks, and they got all guards. Like, what are you doing? Like, for real, what are you doing? So you got all – and, like, if you were ranked them, could they have gotten four better guards in this draft?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
So you got four guards, and you could have gotten better ones at every pick.
Yeah. Like, every single crazy. One. Every single one.
I mean, this is a colossal –
It's one
this
of
the, even an error. No, this ain't the Warriors drafted Chris Washburn and he ends up a dope fiend.
Like, no, this isn't Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan. This isn't like Greg Oden over Kevin Durant. This is none of like this is worse. There was logic to the Sam Bowie. Like it didn't work out. But all right, they had Clyde. Yes, you could play Clyde and Mike together. But it like there's you can at least see the logic there, right? Like, even if you don't agree with the pick and you know Mike's going to be great, you could see the logic there because they had Clyde. The Oden over Durant thing, there was tons of logic there.
Yeah, you see it.
But this is – there is no defense of this – of wasting four draft picks the way they did.
There's none. And, like, not even for big, which is the real coveted – like that's the NBA possession that people lose their mind over, right?
Like
that's
Jordan the one. Jordan Hill wasn't good, and he still would have been a demonstrably better pick than Johnny Flynn.
No question at all. It's like to blow it in this fact. Memphis blew the number two pick.
Yes,
clearly.
Yeah,
they should get a pass based on what Minnesota did in this draft. We don't even Hasheem Thabeet is an afterthought. This draft will be remembered for Steph Curry and Minnesota passing him twice. Yeah. And that's exactly how it should be. They picked Hasheem Thabeet number two in a draft with James Harden, Steph Curry, DeMar DeRozan.
Two of the greatest offensive weapons we'll ever see.
And they got Hasheem Thabeet. And we like, yeah, but that's not as bad as
That's how bad it is. Like, David Kahn was legitimately the worst. Like, absolutely the worst because he didn't just do that. He drove the only good player away that they had. Like, he was gone by the time Kevin Love wanted out, but he drove Kevin Love out.
That's so funny.
He brought him a contract extension while he was working out and said, sign it. And it wasn't the one that Kevin wanted.
Yo, I think David Kahn is worthy of a documentary.
Oh, my God. I mean.
And I think you should do it. And I have $1,000 towards that end.
Wow, really?
Give me an EP credit.
The David Kahn story as told by Zach Harper, produced by Golden.
No, that would be produced by KD. Okay. Kevin Durant's relentless pursuit to be the greatest. That golden money been gone.
That golden money's long, long gone. So closing thoughts on this, Marcus, is there's no way the Wolves.
Dude, have to do this now that I think about it. You literally have to do this. This is like, what are you here for if you don't do this?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Think about how hilarious you would make it. I could just totally see this extra serious spoof.
You know what?
But it's like funny.
I want to sit down with David. That's what I want. I want to sit down with David.
How? Of course you can get it with a documentary.
Yeah. Oh, because he's as big of an attention whore as I am. I was like, hey, David, we're going to be on camera. He'll be in.
Be like, hey, we're doing this documentary. This is your chance to explain yourself.
Yeah.
He'd take it.
And you just let him have the rope, right?
Let him have the rope.
Let him have the rope. Like, there you go, David. Explain yourself. What do you got? See that journalism school get put to use that he was in.
Yo, yeah, you gotta do that. And you gotta get my man from courtside. Coach courtside.
Oh, the coach, the Flip Saunders impersonator?
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's gotta be in there.
He's got to be in it. Bruh, you do an incredible job with that.
If I can get Kevin Love on there, to be candid Brett, about, because
I bet you can get KG too. I bet you.
You talk about the the missteps of that franchise, and you mentioned like you could just talk to Larry, you know, Larry Riley back then, right, and just get information. I've had a couple of off the record discussions with Kevin Love about this very subject, and it is stunning. Just stunning. Dude. Like, if he would be willing to go on the record, it is a stunning, stunning story.
We do documentaries and stories like about like the impact of greatness. Like, there's an antonym to that.
What about the impact of failure?
Yes.
All right.
I'm telling you.
The impact of failure, the David Kahn story, coming to the Athletic soon.
There's nobody better at breaking down failure than Zach Harper.
I've been doing it for years. I've been doing it for 13 years. I've been breaking down failure. You kidding me?
There's nobody better.
I didn't get a golden child in an ownership group delivered to me.
You know what I'm saying? If I have the thrill of victory, you are the master of the agony of defeat.
Oh. At this point, it's just the numbness of defeat. Timberwolves
and Kings.
It doesn't get worse than that. I may as well go cover the Knicks now.
Oh, man. Yeah, you may as well.
Oh, all right.
You may as well.
That is the perfect place to end this podcast. Marcus, thank you so much. Go buy all of Marcus's books wherever you can buy books. Golden and KD, The Relentless Pursuit of Greatness.
And pre-order David Kahn, Impact of Failure. Impact of Failure.
Coming to a theater near you whenever theaters are reopened.
Coming to an on-demand near you, baby. Let's go. This is your 30 for 30 moment.